Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Well, hello and welcome to the weekly edition of the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance podcast. I'm your host, Tim Lightfoot, and I'm so glad that you took the time to join us today. Every week we have interesting individuals in the world of sports medicine, human performance, and general health many times. Today is no exception. We actually are bringing you a twofer today. We have two guests with us in the studio today. We have Major Nick Beringer from the Army with us. Welcome to the podcast, Nick.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here.
And we also have Captain Will Kobe from the Army as well. Welcome, Will.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to be here. And I'm going to take a little bit of time and tell the audience why you're both here. And then we'll just jump into the conversation. And so both of these gentlemen, these distinguished gentlemen, are here at Texas A&M furthering their educational pursuits in service of the United States Army. And so we're glad to have them here. Major Beringer, who will go by Nick from now on, or we'll have to start saying sir and saluting. We've already had those conversations already. So Nick is here. He's a registered dietitian and a licensed dietitian, certified strength and conditioning specialist. His master's degree is from California University of Pennsylvania. He's got his bachelor's degree from the University of Georgia. We were reminded of that. He's here pursuing a doctorate in exercise physiology at Texas A&M University. His previous assignment was at the 75th Ranger Regiment, where he served as a regimental dietitian for 5 years. We also are joined, as we said, by Captain Will Kobe, who is a captain in the Army. He is working on a master's degree in exercise science here. His bachelor's degree is from Villanova. And immediately after finishing his master's degree, he is being assigned to West Point, where he will teach physical education and a variety of other fun things there, right?
Absolutely, in the Department of Physical Education. Molding minds and bodies for future combat operations.
Excellent. Sounds like you've practiced that a bit.
In the mirror a few times.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, with or without sleeves on my shirt.
Yeah. And if you're listening and you can already tell this is not going to be our normal podcast, so we're glad to have these two gentlemen with us. And we've had other representatives of military forces here talk primarily about physical training in the armed forces. And how that relates to general health and well-being. And so I'm going to start with a real simple question. And tell us, what's physical training like in the Army? Is it as strenuous as everybody? And you hear about boot camp being terrible for people. Is it terrible because the people come in so unconditioned, or is it just that strenuous? Will, we'll start with you.
Well,
we'll ignore rank for right now. We'll just go
good.
Will. Yeah.
Well, I think from my experience and Major Beringer's experience, it definitely depends on what unit you serve with. Both being light infantry guys, light airborne guys, in our units we're more focused on running, cardio endurance as opposed to strength endurance. I know I've had great experiences Monday through Friday, 6:30 through 7:45 was regimented PT. Always started with 3 to 5 mile run to continue with push-ups, pull-ups, just full body workouts. I've been with other units, not so much regimented PT. It was the number one priority, serving in the 82nd Airborne. Definitely strenuous PT, Monday through Friday without fail, to include afternoon PT. So what you read, what you see in magazines, you know, what you see in the movies is the real deal there. And I'm sure Nick will say the same thing about serving a regiment for so long.
Yeah. Is it true?
It's much the same. So, you know, the physical training was strenuous. I would say the Army as a whole, physical training is really focused on cardiovascular. And the reason being, in the 70s, Dr. Cooper and all like that, and kind of the Army took to that. And so the test is the Army physical fitness test is 2 minutes of push-ups, 2 minutes of sit-ups, and then a two-mile run for time. And, you know, you being a professor, Dr. Lightfoot, you probably realize everybody trains for the test. And because of that, a lot of units for PT, they just focus on the run, long, slow runs. Mm-hmm. Something that I was able to do at the 75th Ranger Regiment was work as part of the Ranger Athlete Warrior Program. And we realized long, slow runs aren't indicative of what you do in combat. And I think Will agree with me there. So we started adding explosive components, cutting, planning more athletic movements, mm-hmm. and teaching individuals how to move. And that's kind of how our PT was different than I would say we'll call the big Army and the rest of the Army, where most of it is focus, you know, 5 days a week, long, slow runs.
Yeah, in the past, and I mentioned this earlier, we've had General Ramirez on, who was the commandant here of the Corps and who's brigadier general and had quite a bit of service and in his background. And one of the things he talks about is the problems with bringing young adults now into today's Army and having them meet the physical training criteria that we've got out there. Is that something that y'all saw when you were in training with some of the new recruits coming in? Are they in such, are they in worse shape than they've been in the past, or how quickly do they get into shape?
Yeah, it's funny from a personal experience. When I joined the Army, I was somewhere about 240 pounds, not exactly the lean, mean fighting machine that I'd hoped to be one day.
And that you are now.
No.
Those of us that can see you will say that, yeah.
Well, so it was a hard transition for me because I was always the 2-3 hours in the gym lifting the heavy weights instead of understanding that in the Army that's not what you need to do. That cardio endurance, that cardio vascular strength that you need to continue fighting on the mission is something I had to adopt and been ingrained in me since I joined the Army. Having fought those own personal battles, then as a company commander in the 82nd, I understood, you know, where these guys came from, but I did see a trend, and not a positive trend, where guys coming into the Army weren't meeting the requirements we needed to. And then because of that, it caused me more trouble than I had hoped with having to, you know, shape these guys into the soldiers that we needed. So we spent a lot of time reshaping these 18, 19-year-olds who previously had come into the Army, you know, fit to fight.
One of the issues we saw, so we had an assessment and selection process the last unit I was in. So over the 5 years, I got to see kind of, you know, guys trickle through that process. And a trend we definitely saw was, you know, at one point, most of the guys who were trying out, they had played baseball, they had played football. And so they had basic movement skills. Something right. as simple as when you plant and cut, you keep your knee tucked inside your ankle so you don't roll your ankle.
Right.
We saw that kind of erode away, and you would have guys who were quote unquote in cardiovascular condition. They could go north and south. They could move in the sagittal plane. But as soon as we put a load on them and then they had to plant and cut, we saw a lot of rolled ankles. We saw, you know, knee issues. And so we had to take a step back, and something with PT, because you're having so many people just playing Nintendo and Xbox, those things, is teaching those basic movement skills that most of us got growing up playing sports. And I would say that's definitely something that the Army's as a whole is lacking. Is, you know, everybody might be able to run north and south, but again, indicative of combat, you need to go east, west, you know, plant, cut, and turn. And since the younger generation, they're not playing those sports, they're not learning those movement skills. So taking a step back and just teaching people how to move.
Yeah. Is because of these things that you're talking about, is the washout rate in basic training now higher because of this, or do they the recruits do wind up getting in shape? And one of the things Dr. Ramirez talked about was that the higher number of kids coming into the service now with type 2 diabetes in particular, now that's becoming a big problem in the Army. So is that, you think those things are leading to increased washout rates, or do they adjust?
Well, in terms of washout rates, by the time, you know, soldiers get to myself or the officer level, they're already to us, so it's the guys who make it through. So we don't really see the washout rates in basic training. But what you mentioned about dietary needs, you know, the Army's starting to focus on why Major Barringer's here is because we're starting to understand that diet is a huge, you know, factor in the overall physical health and endurance. So that's why it's important that Major Barringer continues on and keeps preaching what he's doing with proper dietitian and also recovery. We weren't, you know, taking the proper steps to recover our bodies because these guys are new to working out at the conditions we need them to work out. So we also have to understand, hey, we can't push these guys every day, all day. You know, they need time to adjust. They need time to work it.
Yeah. And you just bring up something that I think that the audience would be interested in. Is this common for the Army to send its officers back for education? I mean, you're soldiers. You're supposed to be trained to fight and kill, and I'm sure you can, but Will's here for a master's degree in exercise science, and Nick, you're here for a PhD. Is this a common thing?
This is in the Army, especially with the officer corps. This is pretty regular for us. They term it as a broadening assignment for us, so we can go back, get our educations, and then come back and help expand the Army. So in my case, I'll head to West Point. I will teach for the next 2 to 3 years the future officer corps, what I've learned, my experiences in combat, and then now my experiences here at Texas A&M. Gives me that educational basis to be able to teach. And then from there, I'll head straight back into the operational Army. I'll flip the switch and, you know, be ready to answer the call wherever I need to deploy to.
And while we're here talking to you, Will, you're not the only one here.
No.
And we have, there's at least one other individual in our program that's the same path as you are at this point.
There's actually four of us across the Army right now.
Oh.
We had the tremendous opportunity to pick a school, so I selected Texas A&M for some of the reasons you mentioned about the Corps of Cadets and some of the traditions they have here. So myself and Captain Richard Juden, he will leave with me next May after we graduate here with a master's degree, and we will both head up to United States Military Academy and teach for the next 2-3 years.
Yeah. So how about you, Nick? How about, is it common to send back for people to get PhDs?
Yes. So as part of the medical, I fall under the medical department in the Army. They have something called the Long-Term Health Education and Training Program, and so this is part of it. And one of the reasons they have this is one, to do research through the military. We're realizing research is important. And again, kind of having that advantage of somebody who's served, you understand the community better. Yeah. And so you can ask those better questions. Reason they're doing it is down at the AMED Center and School in San Antonio, Texas, a lot of those programs are accredited through different universities. Like the Army, if you come in as a dietitian, you actually get your master's and do a didactic there. In San Antonio, it happens to be accredited through Baylor University and different. And so they require a certain number of PhDs. And so that's why this program was started. And it's a great program. And currently, there's two other dietitians, military dietitians here at Texas A&M studying, one in the Department of Nutrition, and then one, I think it's like community health, public health. So
cool. So yeah. this is a common thing. Well, it's great to have you guys here on campus.
Great to be here.
For the things that you bring to us. Nick, a few minutes ago, you mentioned the Ranger Athlete Warrior Program. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how you got involved with that?
Love to. Yes. So the Ranger Athlete Warrior Program was started by, now he's Lieutenant Colonel retired, Danny McMillan. I got involved in that. I was actually deployed in Iraq and found out they were looking for a dietitian. They were kind of having tryouts, and I immediately kind of, threw my name in the ring, and I got to go and try out and got the unique opportunity as a medical officer. We sometimes don't get to go through a lot of the training that the infantry do, such as Ranger School and those kind of arduous programs. And they afforded me those opportunities. So it was really interesting to kind of go through that process and see, physiologically, I kind of knew, when my body's like breaking down at these points, to know what's going on. When you smell that ammonia, you're like, oh, that's catabolic. It's protein breaking down, that sort of thing. So that's kind of how I got involved with it. And the component about the Ranger Athlete Warrior Program, and now it's even, being pushed out across the Army, different, this thought process, is that the soldier's a tactical athlete. They rely on their body for a living. So that makes you an athlete. And so getting that across to soldiers, so they, think about things kind of like Will mentioned, like refueling after a workout, eating right, doing these things, and making them more cognizant of their body and performance. And so that's what we did at the Ranger Athlete Warrior Program. We focused on performance nutrition. We focused on sports medicine. We focused on the physical training, which most people just think about. And then we also focused on mental toughness. We actually had an occupational therapist who talked about, focus and visualization and those sort of things. And so that was the team, and we went around and we trained the soldiers in that. And I think we had a really successful program.
Well, I tell you, that's really a nice pivot there when you talk about tactical athlete, to really refocus what people might think of as soldiers, because all the things that you talked about, all the four qualities there, I can see where would be very important on the battlefield.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's so many of the guys just think of PT or just the PT in the morning. And so what we were trying to do is get to think about, no, this is something you're doing every day.
It's part of the context that you need. Yeah.
Right. Sleep was a huge thing. We talked to guys, we would put up slides and show that, hey, how many guys got, 4 hours of sleep last night? And the majority of the guys would raise their hands. And, we would show them research that shows, hey, you're basically inebriated at work. Some of these cross studies where they looked at sleep deprivation and alcohol. And then I would show them studies done on Ranger School, which is a school where you're sleep deprived readily, and show testosterone levels. And testosterone levels were like that of a 4-year-old girl. And I'm like, how many guys want to suppress their testosterone? And, meet on hands. And so, then just
so immediately you get
on
sleep.
Yeah. Then guys start focusing on sleep. And it was amazing. I can tell you how many guys came up to me just changing that one thing. I'd be like, man, I feel great. I'm lifting more. I'm running more. I've lost weight, just because they weren't getting enough sleep.
Yeah, so given that topic, it's interesting how much crossover there is between, when we think of sports medicine, we think of the sports, the bat and ball sports and so forth. But, the things that you're talking about now are the things that we've heard from coaches when we have strength and conditioning coaches on over and over again with their athletes, is it's sleep, proper training, proper recovery, proper nutrition. And these are the same things that you're talking now about the modern soldier that they need.
Just like a Division I athlete who, just relies on his athletic strength through high school and stuff, he can get away with that stuff.
Yeah.
When he gets into the Army, you see these guys in the cafeteria and stuff, and you just can't believe they're fueling their bodies with some of the things they're eating. And I think that's one of the things we're really trying to hit on now is, hey, you gotta treat your body 24/7 if you want to see the outcomes that we push on you guys. You're a soldier 24/7. This is your job, and you do your job better if you treat your mind and body better.
Yeah. Now, Will, you come from the 82nd Airborne, and you know, we've all seen pictures of people jumping out of planes, especially the soldiers that got all this pack and all this other stuff between their legs and so forth. What's the average pack weight when you guys come out of a plane like that? You're talking about 80 pounds or so?
Yeah, we're talking probably at the low end about 65 pounds. Probably the high end, your mortar men who are carrying 81 millimeter mortar tubes are looking at about 100, 105. So I've seen some sweaty faces, some guys with a little trepidation and fear when they're about to hit that door, and I'm telling them their parachute will work. They will fall to the ground.
Yeah.
And it'll actually happen a lot faster than they had hoped. So yes, I mean, obviously with missions like that, and Nick is accustomed to that in the 175, you know, they do the same thing we do, tactical airfield seizure. You know, it's a very physically demanding process, and, you know, leading up to it, it's an eight-hour mission leading up to it,
yeah.
And then we're expected to fight for 24 hours, you know, no sleep, no eating, you know, fighting, digging security positions and stuff like that. So you really need to rely on your body, and that's where we prepare them, and that's what we try to teach them. This is all leading to these big missions, because that one real-world event is basically your game time. This is where you shine, and that's why you prepared so hard, is execute the mission to your fullest capabilities.
Yeah, and you may loop back on this question a little bit, but some of this conversation brings up the question is, and what do you two think at this point? You may have different opinions, and that's fine. What do you think are the biggest challenges now that the Army has concerning the health and welfare of their soldiers?
Well, I would say the biggest challenge, if we're talking about the Army as a whole,
mm-hmm.
is the Army is representative of the community. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we pull our ranks from, you know, the American population. And so the obesity epidemic, it's the same issues facing the American population. You know, that's a concern. Are we going to have enough soldiers soldier applicants, I should mm-hmm. say, physical ready, who can meet those demands? Mm-hmm. That's a legitimate concern. And then the other issue sometimes is musculoskeletal injuries, because what you have is you have guys coming through who haven't trained, who doesn't kind of go through that body toughening process, mm-hmm. if you will, and you know, they're getting stress fractures, they're getting all these things just from the training itself. So I would say, you know, as the American population has become deconditioned and we have all those issues, the Army's not immune to that, because that's where we get our soldiers from. So those are the two big issues I see.
I mean, and you talked about the lack of experience in sports in general that so many of them have as well. Yeah.
I think our biggest thing, you know, we've talked a lot about physical toughness, but it's the mental, you know, portion of the game. And we try to teach, you know, we're building our bodies to build our minds at the same time. You know, we've been in combat for 10, going on 12 years now. We got a stressed force, and it's only going to get smaller. So the burden of responsibility is going to be displaced on fewer amount of soldiers. Because of that, we do have to be more mentally fit. So we're going to see more mental issues, I believe, because the stress is just going to continue to increase. We're still going to be asked to do the same things, you know, far away with lands. Still have to juggle home. So I think it's the mental issue is that we really need to shape and be cognizant of, because it's dangerous what the mind can do to you.
Yeah, well, one of the things that old-timers in academia will talk, when we get together and we talk about changes in students, and one of the things we talk about is the lack of coping skills, or the relative lack of coping skills that we see now compared to, we'll say, older days. And so, Will, with what you just said, I can relate to that. Seeing what we have seen here in academia, it's the smallest things make our students seem to fall apart. And so I can only imagine if you put them in a real stressful situation in the Army, how that would be difficult.
Right. I don't know how many times myself and Cameron Juden have looked at each other and kind of winked or smiled when we hear the complaints of, I only got 6 hours of sleep last night, or I did this, and I haven't been out, and this and that. We're like, hey, this is the easiest part of your life. And, you know, when I was 18, when I was 20, I believed that was the hardest portion of my life, too. I was rude awakening standing in Baghdad when I was 23. I kind of understood and kind of appreciated where I'd come from. And that hardens you up very quickly. And I'm thankful for those opportunities. And I'm thankful to be back here to help hopefully show those opportunities, show my experiences, be like, hey, you know, take everything, take every day that you have, because this is a great opportunity. So,
should we take all of our 18 to 20-year-olds and put them in the service for 2 years?
Yes.
We're not identifying who actually said that. So,
no, I think we should shift to a model that there is some sort of community service once you leave a high school. Mm. I've talked about this. It doesn't have to be military service. It can be something, you know, police force, firefighter. But I believe everybody should have to give something back to the community that they were raised in. There are other models, other nations who do that. Yeah. It doesn't have to be, hey, you need to jump out of airplanes and deploy every 12 months. But I think we should all be, as citizens of all-volunteer force, I believe that we should give back to our nation.
And I think that's probably in the context. And again, you say it doesn't have to be military, but it's in the context of broadening their horizon and helping them see themselves in the context of the greater good,
right,
as opposed to just being about themselves.
Absolutely. I know, you know, when I was a young 21-year-old walking around Villanova, and like I said, I thought I had the hardest day of my life. At that time, I didn't think about that young 18-year-old that was deployed in Iraq. And I know his day was a lot harder than mine. You know, as I went home and watched the initial invasion on TV from the comforts of my dorm room, you know, the eyes opened up a few years later when I had that experience. Had that experience more, I probably would have attacked every day at Villanova a little bit harder than I did. I didn't really take full opportunity. That's why I'm here. This is my job, and that's why we really attack every day here. Every assignment, every class, we're always showing up earlier, trying to do our best because we know what a great opportunity this is.
Yeah. Nick, you want to add anything to that? You've been quiet during this part of the conversation.
No. I agree wholeheartedly with Will as far as the service model. You know, a lot of other countries use it. And even here at A&M, a lot of the Korean classmates we have, you know, Korean is a mandatory service. And I think you see that in the students. They're a little older. They're a little more mature. They're a little wiser. They have that. And they appreciate, they have that life experience to appreciate the opportunity afforded to them. Israel's another model that uses it. So, you know, I actually tend to agree with Will on that, is some sort of service model. I think it's good because the biggest thing, you know, we'll hit on, you know, I always tell people kind of about the military. What I'm most appreciative of is those, you know, kind of, can I say, you know, times that suck, if you will,
sure.
Because that gives you a great life perspective. You know, it makes you who you are when your medal's tested. And then, you know, no matter what you face after that, you kind of know it's not going to be as hard as that was. And I can get through that. And you're not going to kind of break under pressure. So like a final exam, even though those are surprisingly more stressful than I remember.
So what can we say to that generation to get them involved in these kind of service things, to have them understand that they are bigger than they're in a bigger thing than what they seem to be?
I think that question is above my pay grade. I don't believe that I can change the nation, but what I can do is you know, bring my experiences to my classroom.
Sure.
We've had people come up and talk to us and ask us about our experience. So something like this, you know, when Nick approached me about doing this, this is a way for me to get my message out there and tell people, you know, they have to learn from experiences and grasp every day. And, you know, mental fortitude and mental toughness is not something that is given to you. It's something that's learned, something that's, you know, developed over years. So this is our way of trying to get our message out there, but I don't know if my model of service is going to start anytime soon, hopefully. Maybe, I don't know. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would say, you know, especially kind of like you were saying, Dr. Lightfoot, as far as, you know, putting out there that the Army educates people and you have all these great opportunities. I've had a lot of students, you know, come up to me and they didn't know they did this. I even had one, and I want to name him, a good friend of mine here. You know, he was like, yeah, I would have went into the Army, but I wanted to go to college. And I think that I don't want to say that stigma or that thought process is out there a lot of times, is, you know, the military is something you do if you don't go to college,
right?
And they don't realize, you know all of the education that's available in the military and all these opportunities that are afforded to us, and that it is a, you know, an educated officer corps. Also, there's a lot of non-commissioned officers who get their degree through the military and who, you know, study through the military. So I think knowing that these opportunities are available, that it's not just, you know, you're going to be digging ditches and, you know, they only know what they've seen on the movies,
sure,
that sort of thing.
Yeah. So this is not the movie world.
No, it's not the movie world. I mean, granted, sometimes, you know, it can be, but but no, for the most part, you know, the military, both officers, non-commissioned officers, you know, it's a highly professional organization, and sets you up for success. And, you know, no matter what you're going to do after that, even if you don't decide to make a career out of it, you're going to be more successful at whatever you attempt, I think, having that military experience.
Well, gentlemen, we thank you so much for being here today. I've got a couple other closing comments in a second, but we always give our guest a moment at the end to give us their take-home message, and we'll go by rank this time, so that means, Will, you get to go first. What take-home message would you have for the audience?
My take-home message would definitely be for myself and everything I try to do. I try to write down attainable goals and something that are, you know, definable, something I can put down on paper and say, hey, this is something I want to accomplish, not only today, tomorrow, the next week, the next year, or the next 5 years of my life. And I think that just helps me create an azimuth or a path for where I want to be in the next, you know, segments of my life, whether it be personal, I want to have, get married, I want to have kids, I want to do this, and professional, I want to get my master's degree, I want to go here, I want to do this. I think definable goals, also being attainable, are very important for everything we do in our daily lives. So that's my take-home message.
Good take-home message.
Thank you.
And next, Nick.
No pressure. No, I'm gonna focus on since you know health and kinesiology is people's physical fitness. You know, we hear so many times, "Hey, I don't have time to work out," or you know, "I don't have time to do this," and you know, I don't buy that. I think we all need to put, you know, working out, you know, the mind and the body, there's a connection there for a reason. And so how important physical fitness is. Mm-hmm. And if you even look at, you know, it can affect national readiness. If people, you know, if the trend continues and people aren't, you know, physically fit or not training or not doing activity, you know, who are we going to pull for if we are attacked or you know, we need to have those soldiers. So, you know, I guess my take-home message is, you know, there's always enough time in the day to get something done, to get some sort of training in. And I'm sure there's been a lot of good, you know, training advice on these other Huffines podcasts they should probably go back and listen to. So.
Thanks. Well, we like that. Like endorsement. That. Yeah, appreciate that. Well, gentlemen, again, let me thank you. And I, on behalf of our listening audience, thank you for being in the service and your service to the country. I know Nick fairly well because he's in one of my classes, but what I'll say is that for the listening audience, these are two fine individuals, and they're great representatives of the Army and great representatives of our country. So thank you, gentlemen, for doing that and for being here with us. For our regular listeners, you know that at this time of the podcast, we have our podcast question of the week. And here with our podcast question is, I think for the first time, is our new associate producer, Aylin. And Aylin's going to give us our podcast question of the week.
Who founded the Ranger Athlete Warrior Program?
That question's out there. So whoever the first one is to send us the correct response via email at huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu, you'll win one of our nifty podcast t-shirts. So again, thank you, gentlemen, for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank all of you that have been listening for taking the time to download us. We hope that you join us next week for another interesting person in the world of sports medicine. And until then, we want you to stay active and healthy.
Thanks for listening to the Huffines Institute Weekly Sports Medicine Podcast. This podcast was produced by Cheryl Marek and Kelly Selman and made possible by generous support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. This podcast is published under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That means you can't sell it or change it, but feel free to give it to everyone you know and to talk and blog about us. And in case you were wondering, our openings and closing are provided by johnmilesproductions.com, and our music was provided by Dave Zeltner. Find him on the web at davidzeltner.com. And just so you know, we love hearing from you. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.